Today on CityCast Chicago, one of the city's most powerful former alders was found guilty on corruption charges, and a child's death at a migrant shelter is raising questions about conditions at the city's largest facility. Executive producer Simone Alisea and producer Michelle Navarro are here to catch us up on the week's biggest stories, plus share a little bit of good news from 2023. It's Friday, December 22nd. I'm Jacoby Cochran, and this is What Chicago is Talking About. Yo, before we get into the episode, I want to remind you, CityCast Chicago has launched our very first membership. Now, if you've been listening all week, you have heard it, and today is the last day I'm going to interrupt the show to talk about it, because it's the last day to become a founding member. Starting at just $8, all members are going to get ad-free listening and members-only updates. We appreciate all your love and support over the first 3 years and 700 episodes, and we want to be here for some more years, so please consider joining now at the friend or the cousin level. You can do it by visiting membership.citycast.fm/Chicago. All right, let's get into the episode. Morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
Morning, Simone.
Good morning, Jacoby.
We've been talking about it for months and months and months. One of the biggest corruption trials in state history, former alderperson Ed Burke was an alderman for 50 years. He was up for 14 charges of corruption, and they said they'd get it done before Christmas, and they kept their promise. Yesterday, it came down. Ed Burke guilty on 13 of the 14 charges, including racketeering, bribery, and attempted extortion. Simone, what's your reaction to this? 13 to 14 charges.
I mean, I can't say I'm terribly surprised, to be honest. I mean, we had that conversation when the trial first started with WTTW's Heather Sharone about sort of how we got here and Burke's history and kind of what he's known for. And right, Burke, longtime chair of the finance committee, very powerful position in city council, was sort of known for being the guy that, like, if you wanted to get something done, you needed to kind of have his say so. And I think the other thing, too, as you alluded to, this has been kind of a long time coming, right? The FBI first raided Burke's offices back in late 2018, right? Indicted in 2019. So it's already been several years, you know, waiting for this trial to happen.
I was going to say a whole politician has rolled that that raid wave to the mayor of Chicago and then out of City Hall in this time.
Yeah, former mayor Lori Lightfoot, we talked about that in the episode too, about how, right, the Burke indictment was sort of one of the things that kind of spearheaded her to victory, because her opponent, Tony Preckwinkle, had some associations with Burke that voters didn't like. And now, as you say, Lori Lightfoot out of, yeah, absolutely.
She got her statement off immediately, got it out.
It's, like I said, I think it's one of those things that's not, not terribly surprising, but that doesn't mean it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he got found guilty on counts involving the post office scheme, trying to push business towards his law firm that deals with property taxes, the Benny's pole sign, as well as field museum extortion, where he basically used his position to get people jobs. Ultimately, what this looked like, he was using his power not only to enrich himself, but to directly move, you know, powerful people towards his business. And in one of these cases, they said after the company involved with the post office, I think in August of 2018, picked up business with his law firm. On September of 2018, he voted on something in city council that was beneficial, that would push some TIF money towards that development. And so they were really able to kind of put all of these pieces together from the wiretapes from former Alder Danny Solis to the sort of the time and place on how not only the business was pushed towards him, but also what that meant in city council with some of the ways he voted. So Michelle, growing up in Gage Park, this was your alder person throughout your childhood, throughout your time, you know, what is it like to be someone whose alder is going to jail? You're joining a pretty long Chicago list.
Like Simone said, I'm not surprised. And if this wasn't what would have came out of it, I think a lot of questions would have been raised that, like, well, what is we doing with all this evidence, you know, that we've seen again and again? It's just interesting to see, you know, like, you have a really powerful alderman in an area full of mostly Mexican Americans. I think a lot of people in the community are surprised, or like they're not surprised about all this at all either. People have felt neglected in the community. He's kind of just been this like shadow of a guy who, like, everyone in Chicago, like, you see his shadow, but you never really see him. So I'm already hearing kind of, you know, on social media, people reacting to the verdict, the Gage Park Latinx Council, which, you know, isn't Gage Park. They immediately tweeted like, oh, we've been saying, you know, that this older person has robbed our community of resources for half a century. And so it's interesting to kind of see, you know, these community members kind of already reacting to what's been said and the verdict in general.
It's worth noting, though, that demographic kind of dichotomy that you are describing, that wasn't always the case, right? When Burke first came into office, the 14th Ward was largely a white ward. And right, that was sort of the base of power for Burke and aldermen like him. And, you know, besides the fact that he was, you know, sitting under indictment on these charges, you know, a big reason he didn't seek re-election this year in 2023 was because of those changing demographics and some of the ward remapping that had happened to really solidify that Latino base in the 14th Ward and on the Southwest side.
We have to wait until potentially June to find out how the courts will sentence Burke. I don't think any of us expect him to get any jail time.
I don't know about any jail time, but it would be like he probably won't get the max.
The max, which is like 20 years.
Yeah. You know, Burke turns 80 years old this month. It's unlikely that a judge will sentence him to the max amount of jail time that these charges carry, both for that reason and for others as well. That was the other thing I wanted to say, too, is, Jacoba, you mentioned joining a long line. This makes Burke the 38th alderperson, member of city council, to be convicted of a crime in the past 50-ish years or so. 38 have been
convicted. They almost got their own city council.
Almost, mm-hmm. Yeah. They have a majority, for sure, at the very least.
The Council of Corruption.
The Council of Convicted Alders could pass any legislation that they wanted to. They have I think it's a veto-proof majority, if I'm doing my math right.
We have been talking about the state of Chicago's new arrival and asylum seeker facilities all month. I mean, we have had news, it feels like, every single day, from the plan for two sort of large-scale facilities that were canceled. People have been looking into how much money is being spent. But at the heart of this story are still the over 20,000 people who have arrived to Chicago in the last year and a half. And this week, tragic news came out of the city's largest facility in the Pilsen neighborhood when a 5-year-old boy was reported dead after days of illness. Jean Carlos Martinez Rivero at an area hospital earlier this week. Simone, investigations have been going on into the cause of the death. More has come out about the state of the Pilsen facility, which, I mean, holds over 2,000 people currently, which honestly was a shock to me when I read it this week. What's the latest news? What do we know so far?
Yeah, I think there's still a lot of confusion and a lot of questions about what's happening. The 5-year-old boy who died was showing signs of illness, was taken to the hospital. And then, like the day after, we also saw other children being taken to the hospital, treated for illnesses, and a couple of adults as well. And so there was this question, like, is there something spreading? Is something going on? The city has come out and said that there is no relationship between the other children who were hospitalized and Martinez Rivero, the young boy who died. You know, that there's not an outbreak of something that is, you know, kind of tearing through the facility that is deadly or worrisome in that sense. That said, there are a lot of illnesses being reported at that facility, a lot of ambulances that have had to respond to emergencies at that facility. And what advocates and also migrants themselves are reporting is that it is very overcrowded, that there is a lot of sickness going around, and also that Some volunteers, particularly medical volunteers, have said that they aren't being given enough access to get inside to actually treat people for illnesses, get folks treated, get folks checked out, get folks vaccinated. From what has been described in a lot of the reporting out of the Sun Times, out of Borderless, out of Block Club, it just sounds like there's sort of a lot of chaos in terms of getting medical treatment and medical attention to folks who are living at this shelter, at again, the city's largest shelter in Pilsen.
While the city focused so much in their response on sort of assuaging fear that there isn't an infectious disease going on, a lot of reporters and critics sort of pushed back and said, okay, but what about the other issues that are being reported? Our colleagues over at Borderless Magazine over the last couple of weeks have been reporting more and more about speaking to asylum seekers who've been staying inside of the city shelters. And people at the Pilsen sites have said, it's dusty, it's cramped. Like you said, we don't
It's cold, too. That's another report.
Right. It's cold as hell. They say the bathrooms are dirty. Sometimes the food is spoiled and expired. People have reported mistreatment, flu, respiratory illness, chicken pox. And so, you know, even if there isn't a sort of infectious disease moving throughout, right now there is a sense of sort of, I don't know if hopelessness is the right word, but a huge frustration moving through the shelter that, you know, on one hand, you know, a company is being paid almost $100 million to run the city's facilities. But when people are saying, hey, we're not getting sort of basic resources, we're not getting basic medical attention, it builds up the question again of all of this money is going out the door, but it doesn't feel like it's maybe getting to the people who need it most.
Yeah, referencing their contract that the city has with Favorite Healthcare Staffing, which is a Kansas-based company that staffs the city shelters and has been criticized by Chicago alders and by others as well for charging exorbitant fees for its services. The city has sort of defended that contract, saying that, you know, they are working on hiring more locally. And I will say, like, this is sort of a really common problem in shelters. This was also a problem, you know, before we had this crisis of folks coming in and being bused and now, you know, and flown to Chicago. Anyone who has ever worked in a homeless shelter or who has worked with that in any kind of shelter population will tell you, like, shelters are a breeding ground for disease in populations that are already vulnerable, right? And so, you know, on the one hand, I think we are certainly right to scrutinize and to sort of call for the city to do better and to sort of demand better conditions. But I will say, like, there is a sense of this is part of what happens when you are trying to house a bunch of people in one place at the same time. You know, you're trying to serve 2,000 people in one place. Like, it's really difficult. It's a really, really difficult proposition just from a public health standpoint, let alone, you know, everything else.
This has become a public health emergency. And the fact that it's taken so long for the city to respond adequately, I think when it comes to a child dying, I hope it would remind people of their humanity, especially if people don't really know how they feel. Most of the times, I think you've said this before, Jacoby, where we talk about, you know, a lot of communities who have felt neglected kind of feel like there's a scarcity of resources. And so when other communities come in and they need the resources as well, and they may feel that, you know, their issues are getting addressed more than theirs has, it could be really divisive and really dangerous. And I don't know, I feel like with everything that's going on with the world, children should be in the care of community. I would hope that people, this is kind of like a rude awakening in a way, like just like for people to really reflect on like what's being done and what can be done.
Before we get out of here, we end every CityCast Chicago episode with some good news. And this year, we have covered hundreds and hundreds of stories that brought a little bit of joy to us. And so we want to end this episode by talking about some of our favorite good news that happened throughout 2023. Michelle, I'm going to start with you. What was one piece of good news that brought a smile to your face this year?
So one piece of good news was back in September, WGN highlighted Michael Earhart. He's a Chicago chef, a Chicago Southsider, and he dedicates his life to giving back to his community. I think for a long time, he's been doing this event called The Taste for the Homeless. And there he kind of just like goes to different areas of the city. He has these events and he just prepares food for people who are experiencing homelessness. And recently he went out to Elk Grove to do the same thing, you know, prepare, you know, set up shop, prepare food, but this time for a group of Venezuelan migrants. And so he was heading out to the suburbs to do that because another organization had kind of reached out and let him know that, you know, they had a population there that really needed help. And I don't know, I just think it's really inspiring. Like, again, just coming off from that news about the really sad living conditions that people are currently living in, you know, under the city's care. And, you know, just to be reminded that there's people in the community. And he's not the only one, right? Like, there's definitely a lot of organizations and people who are reaching out and really trying to, you know, care for this vulnerable population.
For sure. I think Chicagoans in many ways have been the unsung heroes, like y'all have been saying, from making food, providing clothes, providing basic medical care, trying to help figure out using their nonprofit connections in Texas and along the route to let people know and coordinate when people are coming to Chicago. There have been just a lot of everyday folks who've opened up their house, thrown pop-up parties, just been a place of a site of refuge, you know, a sense of community for people who are arriving to a place that is, for all practical purposes, a new, strange, and probably terrifying location. Simone, what about you? What was one piece of good news? Obviously, like all of our conversations, it's hard to whittle it down, but what's something that's carried you this year that's giving you some joy?
Yeah, I was going back through some of our coverage and trying to, you know, we did so many good news stories this year, but one thing that I want to highlight that also kind of gets at this community thing, block parties were back this year. So back in July, we did a couple conversations about block parties, how to host a block party. And as part of that, we were looking up the numbers of how many block party permits people had been asking for. And it's so interesting because you look at 2020, and in 2020, there were 58 block party permits total for the whole year. Now, in 2023, there were nearly 4,000 permits that were issued. So people were out on their blocks, you know, they were getting together, they were, you know, having
drinking
a good,
some little hooks.
Yeah, or whatever, you know, they were having a good time. And I, you know, it's not quite back at the level that it was at 2019, but it's just to kind of see that number kind of growing after, you know, everybody was sort of stuck in their homes and they weren't out in community. Like, I feel like it's just like a data point that really kind of exemplifies just the way everyone was outside and together and hanging out this year. And I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, I stopped by block parties in Calumet Heights, just passing through, walking to my mom's house, Hyde Park very intentionally, and Inglewood. And so they felt back this summer to me.
Those were like my favorite days as a child, like knowing that, you know, my neighbor was coming over to the house with a clipboard. I was like, yes, block party's coming soon. And my block, actually, the one I grew up on, we haven't had a block party since 2019. But now that I'm back, I'm like, maybe I should get on this block party planning committee. Maybe it's my time.
Maybe you know? Clipboard.
But yeah, maybe I'm the one holding the clipboard now. So we'll see.
I love that for Gage Park. Michelle, back to spice things up, y'all, change some things around. And then, because I know our audience and I know they love not only good news, but they love a good news story, my good news from this year is the end of cash bail. The Pretrial Fairness Act officially going into effect in September, was supposed to go into effect earlier this year, but got held up in courts, a bunch of lawsuits, but it officially went in. And a lot of the stories I've been reading over the last couple of weeks and months are saying that, hey, all that nonsense that, you know, conservatives were talking about and those fake newspapers about how the Safety Act, the end of cash bail, was going to bring about sort of a spike in crime and people running through the streets around Chicago and Springfield and other cities in Illinois. It's good to see in these months that everywhere from Sangamon County to Cook County, people are reporting fewer cases needing to be seen by judges. They're reporting like record low numbers inside of their jails. They have seen no associated crime spikes in their areas. Kim Fox had to remind people that 98% of people who are let out pretrial just go back to work or tending to their families or living their lives awaiting trial. In the lead up to this going into effect, there was so much misinformation. There felt like there was so much fear mongering going on. It's good to see that the sky hasn't fallen and that we have taken one step towards creating a slightly more equitable criminal legal system. I want to give another thank you to our producer, Michelle Navarro.
Thanks for having me, Jacoby.
And our executive producer, Samal Aliseya.
Thanks.
Before we get up out of here, I want to give you one last reminder. Vote for CityCast Chicago and Hey Chicago as best podcast and best email newsletter and the Chicago Reader's Best of 2023 list. If you want to know who you can thank for all of this amazing content we've been giving you, here it is. Our executive producer is Simone Aliseya. Our producer is Michelle Navarro. Our newsletter editor is Sydney Madden. Our roving producers are Natalie Rivera and Noah Snyderman. The music we all love is from Sam Thousand, All the Kimonos, and Mark Greenberg from the Mayfair Workshop. As always, we appreciate you for reading and listening. We're off Monday for Christmas, but Tuesday through Friday next week, we're replaying some of your favorite episodes of the year. Peace.